before we even start, I want to sort of let you know our format, what we're going to do. I'm going to each week present some idea to you, and then we're going to spend the last half the question and answer. Now, the question and answer means that everybody gets to ask questions and everybody gets to answer, because I want to know what you're doing to deal with a particular situation, and I want to see how it's going for you. But I'm also going to ask something else of you. The request is that each couple represented here tonight have some type of project that you wish to accomplish in the next 4 weeks with your kid. Whatever it is. I don't give a rip. Yeah, you can come up with whatever. But I want something you would like to accomplish in the next month, 4 weeks. It'd be 3 weeks, because this is week and then week with week. So we've got 3 weeks. But it can be all the way from getting them to stay in the bed at night. It can be anything you want to do. But I want you to have a project for at least a child. Okay? So that's our game plan. And we're talking primarily about children age 6 and down. And we really are talking about kids 18 months up to 6. Parents of kids below 18 months tend not to come to something like this. They're in survival mode. They don't really care about theory, philosophy, and et cetera. They want to survive. But we're going to be dealing with that age range. And I'm just giving a second for anybody else to come that might wish to. I don't have all the answers to all the problems. Let me just say that right off the bat. Things are changing in a lot of different ways, too. But I did do parenting seminars at Pete's East in Memphis for about close to 10 years. And we would do a discipline seminar. And the amazing thing was, we would have a developmental seminar, okay? What to expect out of a one-year-old, 12 months to 24 months. We'd have four people show up. We would do a discipline seminar, and we'd have 50 people show up. Because the major question with kids is how to control them. You know, how to grab them by the nape of the neck like the baby, the lioness does and carries that cub around. Well, how do you bite them in the back of the neck? But we want to have fun. So one of our goals here is to have fun. So raise your hand, say what you want to, go to the bathroom, get a drink of water, hit your husband. I don't care. It's all right. Whatever you want to do, we want to have a good time. People learn a whole lot more with a smile on their face than they do with a frown. So let's have a good time. Let's think about what's going on, and let's see what we can do. Now, we'll begin with the word of prayer. So let's do that. Father, I'm thankful for each person here, each home represented, the children that you've given, the way in which you deal with us lovingly and so graciously. We want to deal with our children the same way, but we want them to love you and to serve you and to honor you. Give us wisdom, give us insight, give us tenacity, but most of all, give us a heart of love that you've given to us to give to them. We pray in Christ's name. Amen. Now, start off with a bias I've got. I got a big bias. I think there are two things that the church ain't doing today. And I mean across the board. I'm not talking about First Presbyterian. I'm talking about the church. Number one, we don't talk about sin. We don't label certain behavior as sinful behavior. A fairly famous psychiatrist wrote a book entitled Whatever Became of Sin. And by the way, he was somewhat Jewish. He wasn't a Christian. But he noticed that the world today doesn't talk about sin. The church does. We don't talk about our children as sinners. Therefore, we are rearing what I call a generation of narcissists. A phone call this week. Nothing from Jackson. Okay? Out of town. Not from around here. Soon to be 18-year-old, soon to graduate, going up northeast to college, announced to her parent that she is going to put herself on birth control because she's tired of taking risks and she wants to be in control of the money. So how much am I going to get? I call that rank narcissism. You know, but that's the world in which we live. That's what happens. Okay, I said a 2x4 ought to do, if not try a shotgun. I tend to be rather non-compassionate about those kind of things. Okay, when they violate value systems significantly, we got us a major problem. Okay, but down to our small children. Yes, you want to say something? Oh, no. I'm just joking. I'm just joking. I'm just joking. Scratch your head. You have to give a question or a statement. I want you, first of all, to realize that down through history, if you want examples of bad parenting or ineffective parenting, one of the best places to look for it's in the Bible. And one of the most effective places to look for it is in the Old Testament, with some of the most significant characters in the Old Testament. Eli, the one who trained Samuel, the one that the voice came to Samuel and he thought Eli was calling him, had two sons. They were not so good guys. As a matter of fact, when the people brought meat into the temple, the rule was you're to cook the meat and the priest was to stick the two-pronged fork in and whatever came up, he got. Well, they said, nah, we get to select the meat before it's cooked and we get to take the whole thing if we want it. Not only that, they sort of messed around a little bit too. And you'd think that Samuel's sons would be better, wouldn't you? And they were no better. They had sex with the temple lady, the ladies who cleaned the temple. And it was known throughout the land of Israel. And not only that, we have another situation where if you read Ezekiel chapter 18, we have a fairly famous passage in there where Ezekiel is talking and he says, why do the people of Israel say the fathers eat sour grapes and the children's teeth are set on edge? He says that no longer will be used as a proverb in Israel. The implication being covenant, what happens to the father happens to the son, happens to the grandson, the covenant thinking. And then he says there was a righteous man who did everything he was supposed to do, and God blessed him. You can read all of it. It's about the whole chapter, you know, a bunch of verses. I'm going to read it all. But he had a son. And his son came along and did everything wrong that could be done. And he was not blessed by God. But then he had a son. And that son came along, looked at what his daddy did, implication being looked at what his granddaddy did, and he did what was righteous in God's sight. He kept the covenant. And then the chapter ends up by saying, each person will be judged according to what they do and how they handle life. Now, I know it's Old Testament. Grace is not talked about right there, but this was in the light of grace, and grace has to be applied to everything. But there is still the individual component. Your child is going to have to make decisions in life. Your child is going to have to grow up and choose what he or she will do. And that's the number one thing I'm trying to tell you tonight is your child's going to make decisions. Hence, we'll talk about it a little bit here. My definition of the goal of parenting, some of you heard it before, but I'm going to say it again. The goal of the parent is to train the child to make decisions in the light of consequences, in as healthy a manner as possible, with consideration for self and others, and in harmony with my value system, my being parent. My kids are going to make decisions in the light of my value system. When they get big, it'll be their value system. But my kids, my value system. Make decisions for criteria. Now, that's background, and we'll talk more about that. They're having too much fun down there. Close that door. Now, all of this is against the backdrop of covenant theology. We are in a Presbyterian system. We believe God's promises made to us and to our children, to our grandchildren. It's in the Ten Commandments. Okay? So we believe in covenant theology about God's promises. We also believe something else in terms of covenant theology. Blessed be the God and Father of our Lord Jesus Christ, who has blessed us with every spiritual blessing in the heavenly places in Christ, just as He chose us in Him before the foundation of the world, that we would be holy and blameless before Him in love. He predestined, the way it's said here, us to adoption as sons through Jesus Christ to Himself, according to the kind intention of His will. That is an awesome promise. God had you in mind before He created the world. We believe that. But we also believe that if you don't affiliate with, accept, look for the grace in Christ, you don't get it. Ezekiel 18 is still true. You have to make that call. So what you're doing is you're rearing your children right now with eternity in mind. That's what I'm trying to say. Rear them with eternity in mind. So whatever we do, I want it to have implications for how we are going to be, how they're going to be in the future. So that's what we want to try to do. Now, with that in mind, the definition of the goal of parenting, I just want to give you just a few verses, and we'll crank on up here. Train the child in the way in which he should go. The most famous passage that has to do that, Proverbs 22, 1 through 5. If you're going to memorize a passage, memorize that one. But train the child. My decision to train the child. Deuteronomy 4, 9. Only be careful and watch yourselves closely so that you do not forget the things your eyes have seen or let them slip from your heart as long as you live. Teach them to your children and to their children after them. We have a mandate. I have one. You have one. To your children and to your grandchildren. Teach them the things that you have seen of God. Deuteronomy 11, I won't read all of it, picking up at verse 18. Fix these words of mine in your hearts and minds. Tie them as symbols on your hands and bind them on your foreheads. Teach them to your children, talking about them when you sit at home and when you walk along the road and when you lie down and when you get up. Write them on the door frames of your houses and on your gates so that your days and the days of your children may be many in the land that the Lord swore to give your forefathers, as many as the days that the heavens are above the earth. And then Proverbs 22:6. Train a child in the way in which he should go, and when he is old, he will not turn from it. Train up a child. That's what we're talking about. That's what we want to do. Now, I told you I had two pet biases. I gave you one. One pet bias is we don't talk about sin. The other pet bias is we don't think about, talk about, emphasize God's calling. If that passage is accurate that I read to you, if Revelation is accurate, the Lamb slain before the foundation of the world, if God has this overview that He's passing out, we are stewards to pass on that grace to our children. And to not do so is to set them up. How do we pass that on to them? One way, by training them. And by the way, what does train mean? Your parents, choo-choo, woo-woo, going down the track? A train is a group of similar things connected together with a single purpose to get to a point. That's what you're trying to do with your kids. You're trying to do everything with a single purpose to get them to a point. So everything we do, all the way from hugging and kissing in the morning to swatting on the bottom in the afternoon to changing the bottom, it's got one purpose in mind, to get them to that goal. That's what we want to do. Okay, train the child. Calling. I would like right now for you to begin praying for your child that before they graduate from high school, they would have some sense of God's calling to them as to what they should do in life. By the way, God's calling changes. God called me to be a minister. I was under the care of Presbytery as a senior in high school, which I think ought to be illegal, by the way, but anyway, I was. So I go off to college to be a preacher boy. I lasted 13 months. That's how long I was in the church as an assistant minister full time. Then I started teaching. Then I got interested in psych. Then I was faculty members, different places. So I've done a whole bunch of different things. But my fantasy is that God's calling was involved in everything that I did. And when I feel that, I have a different thing going on inside my heart. Parallel. I feel the same way about my wife. Sometimes I just really don't like her a whole bunch. Sometimes she's just a real snit. Of course, I'm a few other words, too. You understand that. But it has never crossed my mind that she's not the one that God wants me to be with. See, that keeps you together when I'm being putting out a bunch of equine defecation. Or bovine defecation. Or canine defecation. Anyway, when I'm putting out a bunch of stuff, and she's being a snit, okay? But if that's the one I feel called to be with, we got a different package, see? That's what holds it together. It isn't how pretty she is or how smart I am or what we do. It's God's calling. Well, your kids are God's calling. God has given you a special treasure. What I'm trying to say is, I want the answer to most of our questions that have to do with children and life are found in our theology. Our theology is our summing together of what the Bible teaches, or how we're supposed to be. And I think we can sum together what the Bible teaches and what we believe. Our theology does a beautiful job. Now, you can't get this book, so don't go to the bookstore, okay? I was told to tell you that. But the best book I've ever come across on parenting is this one right here. The Duties of Parents. The problem with this book is, see, I got to find the date at which it was written. I got it down in here somewhere. 16-something. 1679.
You know the guy that wrote it never had kids?
Really?
Yeah.
His ideas are right on. It's the most solid thing I've ever read about parenting. The problem is we can't do it. Our world isn't geared to this. Our world does not go this way. Okay? The other thing that you might be interested in reading is this one right here. Only if you're a weirdo, like history teachers. The Family in the Western World. From the Black Death to the Industrial Age. How about that for a subtitle? From this little book, we learn that in the 1500s, you had to have two kids to get one. Because somewhere around 30%, 40% of all children died before the age of one. And about 50% of them lived to maturity. So if you wanted to have a child, you had to have two to get one. We also learned that parents didn't give their children names until they were at least a year old. They didn't want to get attached to them because they might die. The whole parenting thing has changed a whole bunch, right? So we live in a different world compared to what they lived in. Okay, our theology is our definition of what we want to try to do. That's what we want to do. But it has to be applied practically, and there needs to be a rationale theologically for what we do. Now, with that in mind, what is your number one problem with your child, age approximately 18 months to 6 years? That's what we're talking about. What's your problem? Somebody give me an answer. I don't care. Yeah. Whining.
I can't deal with whining.
Okay. You shouldn't have to. There's no reason to.
Oh, I know. It's really cool.
It's called a cattle prod. It's called a cattle prod. Just zap them real good and they'll stop whining. We make a joke out of that and laugh at it. But why do children whine? To get what they want? You're so close it's sniffing up on it, okay? To get attention, which equals what they want. See? Whining gets attention. A whining child is going to get more attention than a quiet child. Right? Okay? Okay, mamas. Now, some of you heard me use my little cliches before, but I'm going to use them tonight, and I may reuse them because they apply. Daddies tend to be shotgun daddies, and mamas tend to machine gun mamas. Daddy says, no! and Mama said, no, 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 stop that, stop that, stop that. I told you, stop it. How many times have I got to tell you don't do that anymore? Quit it. Stop whining. Go in the other room. I don't want to hear that anymore. And Daddy said, no. Guess which one they mind the most? The shotgun. By the way, there's research behind all this, too. Children respond. They're comforted more by a higher-pitched voice, but they respond more to a lower-pitched voice. So, no is more effective than no, 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 no. Okay? Let your yea be yea and your nay be nay. You know, say it and let it be done. Whining. What do you think we do with a whiny kid? Give me an idea. Somebody give me an idea. Other than the cattle prod, I already used that one.
I tell them, when you don't hear whining, and whining is like telling God no. Whining and complaining is like telling God no.
Is that what you tell your child?
Yes. Little people. I mean, small people, I tell them to.
Mm-hmm.
Tell them to go to their room.
Tell them to go to their room.
Go time out.
Go time out.
I don't hear it.
You don't hear it? All these are effective, good things. But let's get some principles in mind, okay? How do we do time out? By the way, pause. I got to tell a story. I worked for a year at Lake Avenue Congregational Church in Pasadena, California. My purpose in working there, it was just a Sunday thing. It was a part-time job. But my purpose in being there was to design a program for the 1 to 2 year old nursery, 12 months to 24 months old. Every Sunday morning, they had approximately 30 children in the 1 to 2 year old nursery. They had three little old ladies to take care of the kids. That's one per 10, right? Wrong. Because when you have 30 kids, number one is always a dirty diaper. Always a dirty diaper with 30 kids, okay? So one is always changing the diaper. Okay, two for 29, right? Wrong. Because the one who whines the most gets rocked. That left one frantic lady with 28. Okay? Story. So what we did was, well, designed a whole bunch of stuff, but we had a playroom with foam on the floor to help them with fine muscle coordination, practice skills, all that good kind of stuff, boppos to play with. It had generally a little anger and violence in them. But we also had a timeout room. True story. Little Billy was 18 months old. He was child number four. And child number four, the mother stated publicly that she was going to enjoy this one. Guess what that means? Spoil rotten. That's what it really means. We would have to peel little Billy off of his mommy every Sunday when she brought him in. Have you ever peeled a kid off of mama? It's sort of like gum off your shoe. It's like you don't get it all first try, you know. We'd have to pull him back, and the reason you don't get him all is because he always had a snotty nose from all the crying for mama, okay? So, little Billy became my project. So we come up with a timeout room. It was approximately 8 feet by 6 feet. It was a closet. No windows. And so we put a baby bed in there and put little Billy in the bed. By the way, when you pick up one that age, there are certain things you must learn real quickly. Number one, the right arm goes under the rumpus. They face out. The left arm goes around the tummy and grabs the right hand. The left hand can do what it wants to then as snot falls off front. It doesn't get on your shirt and on your coat. I took little Billy, and I can also whisper in his ear. And I said, oh, we're so glad. We're so glad to have you here today. By the way, always talk to your child as if they know what you're saying. We have rough ideas about active vocabulary. Little girls talk sooner than little boys do. 12 months for little girls, 14, 15, 2 or 3 years for boys, maybe 20 years for boys. Who knows? Depends on the marriage problem. But we don't know the passive vocabulary, what they understand. You never know when they start under, and the day will click when bloop, suddenly they know what you're saying, okay? Talk to them as if they understand. So I'm talking to little Billy. we're so glad to have you. And he's claiming Buddy Murder. And I said, we're so glad to have you here. I understand that you need to cry. That's perfectly all right. But we have a cry room here. And as long as you wish to cry, you'll have to be in the cry room. So I'm going to put you in the cry room now. When you get through crying, I'll come get you. So I took him, put him in the bed, left the light on. I didn't turn the light out. I'm not cruel and inhumane. I thought about it, but I didn't. Closed the door. And when he gets down to the stage, I turned the doorknob. And as soon as he heard the doorknob creak, he went, rah! And I closed the door. With what is commonly called successive approximation, I get in and pick him up. Still the same way, backwards, because he's got a real bad nose now. And I say, we're so glad to have you here. I'm glad you're through crying. We're going to go out now and we'll play. So we start to walk out the door, and the little old lady who rocked him every Sunday said, oh, is my widow boy having a hard time? And guess what little Billy did? So we had to start all over again. Back in the room, close the door, da-da-da-da, da-da-da-da. Okay, I'm trying to tell you, 18 months old, and 2 weeks he was on the floor playing with everybody else. And for 6 months, he had been a pain in the rear. And in 2 weeks, he's down on the floor. He knew if he cried, he went to the cry room. If he didn't cry, he got to play. And he wasn't going to get rocked. He can crawl in the corner and suck his thumb, far as I care. It's all right, but he's not going to get rocked. 18 months. Now, time out. How many of y'all use time out? Hallelujah. Theologically, time out is sound. Theologically, it's sound because time out is the closest human approximation to hell. What is the definition of hell? Total separation. We think of fire and brimstone, okay, and for all I know that may be true, but the core component of hell is total separation from God, eternal separation from God. What is time out? Separation from mommy and daddy, okay? And people who say, I don't believe in time out, I say, well, I do, because God's going to put a lot of people in time out. You know, when time comes, that's what's going to happen. So it's theologically sound. But we have to do it in certain ways. If you got a whiner, somebody said time out, I got no problem, I'm all for that. Ignoring is another thing to do. I'm all for that. But if ignoring doesn't work, I'm sidetracking. Ignoring, what you do when you ignore, though, you say, something's going on, but I can't understand what's being said. And then you walk right on and do what you're doing. You don't know whether he understands it or not if he's 18 months old. But you say so. And when he stops whining, you go and say, oh, hey, sweetie, good to see. Well, what's going on? See? But if you consistently ignore, okay. If you don't, it won't work. Time out. Time out is typically done if an 18 months at that age range in a crib, baby bed, playpen, don't care, as long as it's safe. In a total isolation room. Do not put them in timeout in their bedroom. Their bedroom is where their blanket is, their toys are, their books are, their, in today's world, TVs are, where their whole world is in their bedroom. Furthermore, the child's bedroom should be the warmest, most secure room in the house to the child. I don't want to take that away from the child. Okay, half bath. Another bedroom. Something like that. Now, you never send a child to time out. That's like asking them to impose punishment on themselves. The Constitution said we don't have to testify against ourselves. I shouldn't have to punish myself. No, you take them. Why do you take them to time out? Because you are the parent. They are not in control. They do not participate in exercising discipline. You are the authority figure. So you don't expect them to do part of their own punishment. And I don't mind using the word punishment. Consequence is the more technically accurate word. But you don't send them. And do not explain to them why you're taking them. They are smarter than you are. Y'all know that, don't you? I've said this many times before. All three of my kids have a higher IQ than I do. But none of them was as hungry as I was. That's the difference, see. Your kids, odds are going to have at least your IQ, if not higher. Yes?
I have a question. Okay,
would you have low IQ? No, it's all right.
If what they do is like involving the other child or is interfering with you taking care of the other child and you send them to timeout because it's taken away, like, you kind of see what I'm saying?
Yeah. But
you've got this other kid that you got to do something with.
You put the other kid on the middle of the floor on the blanket and you take them to timeout.
Okay.
And furthermore, if both of them are in trouble, you punish them both.
Well, what if that's kind of like they're doing it to get attention? Like, what if that?
You put them in timeout, and they get no attention in timeout.
Okay.
I promise you, please try this. If that's your project, okay, let's see what can happen.
How long?
The general rule of thumb is 1 minute per year of life. It's not how long they stay. It's how consistently they have to stay. Please keep that in mind. Now, it seems ridiculous to put a two-year-old in for 2 minutes, okay? But to a two-year-old, 2 minutes is forever. Now, if you want to leave in 30 minutes, that's your call.
Then I can explain part of it, so don't.
Do not explain. No. Don't. And the reason I say this.
So I'm asking you why you say not to.
Because the kid is so blanking smart. They know exactly what's going on. They know why. And furthermore, what does explanation equal? It equals gray area. I'm doing this because you did so and so, and soon they can talk to you. I didn't do that. Susie did this to me.
So not even at the end of their punishment?
No.
Unless
they ask.
Never. Okay.
No. They know what they've done.
Right.
Trust me for the moment, okay? They are smart. They know.
Now, usually what we've done, and it seems to work pretty well, is when we take them out of timeout, we ask, now, why did you go to timeout, and have them tell us?
I have no problem asking them. But personally, I want them to make their own decisions, and I'm going to trust them to know why I put them in timeout or to ask me why. If they say, why did you put me in timeout? I didn't do anything. I put you in because you did so-and-so. I didn't do that. I wasn't the one who did it. By the way, I can only be absolutely responsible for what I see with my own eyes. I can't even be absolutely responsible for what I hear with my own ears because it's in the other room. You do understand that kids love to attack the sibling and get the sibling in trouble. And see, that's why if you have that going on, punish them both. At least you know you got the guilty one if you punish them both. Yes.
Because we're so big on explaining everything to our children that they think they're on our level.
That's
so often.
Duh.
I don't need to explain myself. If you were like in a commando team and I said, "You better run," because if you don't just pick it up and run, you're gonna die. When mommy says, "Do this," I'm not explaining myself. I mean, and it's. But when you say it's putting them on your level, I'm going to explain this to you because me and you are equal to a degree.
Well, yeah, at minimum, you're putting them on your level, okay? But the other thing that you're doing is you're trying to get them to understand what they did wrong. So many things I throw in as we go along. Remember, the new nature's goal is to glorify God and enjoy Him forever. The old nature's goal is the greatest amount of pleasure for the least amount of pain. And that my child is locked into that old nature mindset. I want the greatest amount of pleasure for the least amount of pain. And if I can work you and get more pleasure, I'm going to do it. If I can work you and not have any pain, I'm going to do it. I'm assuming that because my child's a covenant child, they're going to say, "Oh, I get your point, Mom. I should not have done that because that was unfair. Okay, I won't do that anymore." I've never come across a 3-year-old that said that. Not even a 6-year-old. They don't say that. Now, in terms of explaining now, see, I want them to make decisions. I want them to be thinking. Well, if they blow it off, and by the way, if the child says, "Huh, that didn't do anything," which they will. Don't say a word. Take their hand, put them back in the half bath. And by the way, dads, we live in the South, dads, take the doorknob and reverse it. That way the bathroom door locks from the outside, not the inside. And they can't get out.
So it, screaming the entire
time? I don't give a rip, they scream. Okay, the time starts when they stop crying. They have 3 minutes of silence. Now, as I've told this story, and some of y'all have heard it, indulge the old man, okay? True story, Jewish mama, come see me. Six-year-old hitting on a four-year-old. I'm in California. I tell her time out. She goes home, comes back and say, Elkin, your stupid little thing doesn't work. I say, oh, tell me about it. She said, I put him in timeout. He started kicking the door. I opened the door and said, don't kick the door. Rule number 4 or 5, whatever it is, never make a rule you can't enforce. You can't keep little snot nose from kicking the door. So guess what I told her to do? Anybody got it? Some of you heard the story, but anybody, guess what I told her to do? Close. You're close. Take his shoes off. And she went home and came back the next week and said, well, he started kicking the door with his heel, and I had to go out in the backyard. But when I came back in, he wasn't kicking the door, so I let him stay 6 minutes and let him come out. And she said, I only had to put him in timeout 2 more times during the week. Our kids are smart. They understand that if they don't like it, it's going, and they don't want that to happen, so they figure that out pretty quickly. Explaining, I want them to think. The more I say to them, the more of a target I give to them to shoot at. See? And the more I give for them to debate, the more I give for them to say, you didn't hear it all. It wasn't my fault. And by the way, I jokingly said spank them both, but I do mean that. Discipline them both. The last time I spanked my daughters, Saturday morning, my morning to sleep in, their bedroom's right above ours, and I hear they were jumping from one bed across the room to the other bed, hitting each other. I tore up the stairs and whooped them both. In a total rage, by the way, which please don't do. But I had confidence. Suppose I had only whipped the one I heard. Again, kids love to walk up to one of the other ones and go, and then you say, don't hit me like that. And I say, stop hitting her, or what's going on, or I don't know what happened. You yell, you both go time out. It's not fair. Depending on age, yeah, where they're safe. Then you get another crib in another room. It will cost you whatever a playpen will cost you. But have another one. If you're using that for nap time, etc., put one in the living room where you can close the door. And by the way, timeout should be where they have no auditory or visual contact with you. I want it to be total isolation. Bathroom. You have to chop her.
Would entertain our middle child. She would get going watching herself in the mirror.
Okay, I have had a kid take the toilet roll, put it in the jar, and start flushing. So you have to child-proof the room if you're going to do that, see? But the point is, time out. I want as few words as possible. I want them put in there, and I want them, you may come out now. You've done your time. Come on out. And if they come out, cool. If they come out, put them right back in. And they come out again, they say, why'd you put me back in? Say, then ask, why do you think I put you back in? Well, because maybe I was ugly to you? Yep, you don't talk to your mommy that way. You don't talk to your daddy like that. Now, you want to play? Let's play. You want to be in the den? Let's be in the den.
What do you do about an argumentative child?
You don't talk to them. Again, the argumentative child has learned the art of debate. They're going to make a great attorney one day. But what they really want to do, the argumentative child is the one whose playground is the gray area. And they will literally take to task whatever you say. And it won't be quite accurate. And by the way, it probably isn't. You know, we don't exactly get it precisely right. And they will seize on the little bitty thing that you didn't do quite right. That's what they'll pay attention to. And now you're hung. Suppose they're right. In terms of argumentativeness, zip the lip. Say, I will talk to you. By the way, I have no problem explaining one time what I'm going to do. But once I explain, and explain what you're going to do when everything's cool and great. By the way, kids, from now on, I don't care if they're 18 months old. I don't care. From now on, any time you don't do what mommy or daddy say or you act ugly with your brother or your sister, you're going to go in time out. I don't care. I have told them. Now you take them and put them in time out. Yes.
Yep. Try to use the spanking method, especially with boys, unless we're worried that they're hurting themselves. Okay, so my question now, so now we've got almost 3-year-olds, okay? And we're coming into the, we're needing the spanking spoon a good bit more.
Yep.
So my question is, without overusing the spanking spoon, when can I pull this thing out with regards to, like, when we're in public,
Of course I can address that. First of all, I have no problem with the spanking spoon, okay? Please don't get what I'm about to say wrong, okay? What I prefer, there used to be a thing called a bolo paddle. It had a rubber band on it and a ball, and you would hit it and bing, 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 like that. Pull the staple out. Take the string off. That bolo paddle will go in most purses that you have to carry with you, okay? The trouble with a spanking spoon is it has the potential to bruise. If your child is spotted by the pediatrician at next visit with bruises on its bottom and there is a suspicion of child abuse, by law it must be reported.
Well, if we're careful, then I...
But if you use the bolo, you're not going to bruise. Sometimes timeout is not available to you if you're at a store somewhere, if you're in the car somewhere, something like that. But I'm trying to deal with the legal issue. I've actually had to go to court to testify to get a Christian couple to keep custody of their child because they had spanked the child and the daddy had used a belt and bruised it. And they were in danger and they came that close to losing custody of their child. See, I'm sensitive to that issue. Now, the rule of thumb, my rule in terms of spanking is I would rather inflict known pain on my child than have my child experience unknown pain. If my child is doing something dangerous, if they run down the street, I'll tear their bottom off. I'd rather them be alive and bruised than dead, see? If they're banging on the front of the TV with a hammer, I'm going to tear them up. Other moral situations, and in Mama's case in particular, if they're disobedient to Mama, I've actually had a 9-year-old get spanked and turn around and say to Mama, are you through? You want to do some more? See, that's why we want to limit it, because the day is going to come, as I said before, when your ability to exercise corporal punishment is going to be gone. And it happens to all of us, sooner or later. Kids will get to the point where I'd rather be spanked and get it over with. Well, again, I have no trouble using, but see, the reason I say the bolo paddle is there's less danger of legal consequences if you use that. The spanking spoon is okay, but you must be careful. And I personally ask you to use no more than 3 licks, because my problem with spanking is what it turns into is an exercise in my futility and frustration.
Okay.
The more frustrated I am, the harder I'm going to hit.
Awesome.
Yeah, just a minute.
Well, I always use my hand. It's so much more convenient.
It goes with you where you go.
Well, you also know how hard. You have control
yeah.
over your
yeah,
hand.
Yeah, it's a hand attack.
You also tend, you can bruise with a hand, but you tend not to. My daddy never spanked me with anything but his hand. Of course, my daddy was a machinist. And his hand was like a slab of leather. As a matter, but so, you know, I have no problem with that. But, spare the rod, spoil the child is what most people will go to when they think about using something else. They would rather see the paddle or the spoon be the instrument of discipline than a part of you be the instrument of discipline. I don't know. My daddy used his hand, and it didn't warp me.
We don't have to. Our kids have a strong distaste for spankings, and so we
from daddy or mama or both?
I guess from both, mainly me.
But
they're spanking very hard. I think they're just so sensitive that it just goes a long way with them. But so I threaten spankings frequently, but rarely actually have to do it because by the time I bring that up, they do what I want them to do.
So you start threatening?
See,
but they know that if I threaten it, that
it's gonna
happen. That I will. You know, I don't think I've ever said I'd spank them if they did something, and then they did it, and then not spank them.
We all do everything, okay? So I've done the same thing, okay? I have threatened. I've done all anything you want to name, I've done, okay? Right, wrong, or indifferent, I've done it. I like it better when I don't threaten. Threatening extends the gray area. See, I want them to know not to do certain things. But if you do, do it. See, I tell them one time, if you hit your sister, you're going to get a spanking. Whatever, see?
Well, see, for us, it's more of like, you know, eating supper. You're going to eat a bite of your carrots. And, you know, we could either, you know, if I send them to time out, that's what they want because they get to leave the...
Sure.
They get to leave the table and
okay. Okay.
And so I don't want to sit there and have a long, stressful meal. So they know, but that's fast. If I say, you eat your carrot or I'm going to give you a spanking.
Okay. Well, see, here's a little philosophical thing. I don't think I ever forced my child to eat anything. Period. But there's a consequence way to get to the same thing. You don't eat what mommy puts on your plate. You can be excused now. You can go in the other room. You don't have to eat. Very few kids in Jackson die of starvation, just for the record, okay? They have to be old enough to understand what you're saying and to contemplate what you're saying. You have to make the judgment call, do they understand? But now to get back, see, what I will say, then they go come back later and say, well, can I have my supper now? I'll be good. I'll eat my supper now. I'll eat my carrots now. You say, nope. Here's a glass of milk. That's all you get tonight.
You do give them a glass of milk
then? That way, I would let them have some milk, yeah. Don't worry about it. The worst thing that can happen is they go up gay. That's the only thing. Well, have a hand back here, Olivia.
Well, I was going to say, I got some good advice about spanking. I do time out as well, and I try. It's pretty much reflects what you've been describing, but with spanking, what I have found, good advice is have a set place where the spoon is.
Yeah.
That way you go get it, and by the time you're going there, Lord willing,
you calm down a bit.
Getting your heart right.
Yeah.
And then at the place where the spoon sits, there's a chair,
mm-hmm.
and I sit in it, and they stand there, and we have a conversation. Now, I'm not trying to put them on the equal page, but a lot of times we're having good conversation, and I will say, God has put me in authority over you, and I'm under his authority. And mm-hmm. if I don't correct you, I am disobeying God. And I'm not going to disobey God. I'm going to spank you.
Mm-hmm.
And then my children know, because I show them at every home we go to, there's a wooden spoon in that kitchen. You shouldn't see their little faces. They're so amazed to know that there's a winner in here. Everyone has them. I have them in my car. I have a long-handled wooden spoon in my car to get attention.
They like you at Everyday Gourmet, don't they? I have no problem with doing it that way, okay? You see, and my parallel to that is the bolo paddle is a toy, and a lot of people play with it. But see, children need to learn that punishment can come from a variety of sources. It isn't just a spoon.
We also have a rod.
And I also want that paddle to be in Mama's purse, so anywhere we go, they know you've got it. Same thing, hang it on the wall in the breakfast room is what I'd say. Okay, we had a hand over here. Amy? Exercise the power that you have first. What's your number one power? Let the water out of the stupid tub.
Oh, well, I got another kid in there.
I see. Then bathe them both and let the water out of the tub.
Okay.
And then you didn't get out when I told you to, so you are going to go to timeout.
Okay.
See, I don't want to. What I really don't want is all this debate going on and this education going on.
Don't give them a choice.
I will say, I want them to obey you. I don't mean blind obedience. Now, so many things I'm jumping ahead into, and I've got to tell this story. The research was done after World War II. How come the Germans were so compliant in killing so many millions of people? It must have been the Germans, the nasty Germans. Right? Wrong. A guy did some research up there, and this was the deal. You bring in two people, one of whom is an accomplice, and the other one is going to be the subject, but they don't know they're the subject. And you say, we are evaluating whether or not punishment facilitates learning, and does increased punishment increase learning? Now, I happen to replicate this from my master's research. I had preachers divided into three groups. One group did nothing. One wrote a sermon on love your neighbors yourself, and the other one had to write and preach a sermon on love your neighbors yourself. And then they came in. And, of course, my accomplice knows what's going on. I said, one of you needs to be the subject. And the accomplice says, okay, I'll be the subject. Take them in the other room and hook them up to electrodes. And then we give them nonsense syllables. And the guy that I'm really evaluating calls out the syllables. And if they make a mistake, he's to flip a switch, 15 volts. Next time they make a mistake, 30 volts. 45. Up to 450 volts. If you know anything about electricity, it's amperage, not voltage. But forget that for the moment, okay? How far will people go flipping a switch when somebody in a coat tells them to do it? I had one little gal boohooing because my subject was her young life leader. And she flipped switches on him all the way up to 450. Well, what I don't want is my child to be so authority-oriented that they won't challenge anything. But we're not talking 18 years. We're talking 3 years. We start off establishing the principle of doing what your parents say. See, I don't want blind obedience. I want reasoned obedience. Because the day is going to come when God is calling them to do something that you don't want them to do. And when he's calling them to do something that you don't like, what are they going to do? What you say or what God says? And it can be as simple, y'all know this story too. I got ready to go to graduate school. I go to my dad and say, Dad, I'm thinking about moving to California, wife and two kids, and go to school. And he says, well, you can't do it. You got a wife and two kids and no money. You can't possibly do that. I called him back 3 weeks later and said, we're moving to California. I honored my dad by talking to him, but I didn't obey him. Your kids need to arrive at the point where they obey God's calling to them, not your feelings about them. Now, see, this is, again, back. I want our theology to play into everything that we do. I want my children to think. I want them to think as opposed to me to spoon feed them. Where'd that come from? It's called brain dead. But see, when you're dealing with them, the more gray area, the more conflict area. Yes?
So, how do you differentiate between them not blindly obeying, but then not explaining, you're going
to turn out because you did this? Because I want them to think about it. They will think about it. Again, they're smart little buggers. And the day will come when they ask you, why'd you do that? And you explain to them, tell them, I got no problem. I want you to do that. But at 3 years old, I don't want a debate going on. Because mamas, I'm sorry, we live in the belt buckle of male chauvinism. And your son rapidly will rise up against a woman telling him what to do. That is going to happen because of where we live. It is going to happen. So let's don't say if, let's say when it happens. And daddies, your task is to say to that little bugger, no way, Jose. Remember my cliche that I use all the time, never tell your son, don't talk to your mother that way. What you tell your son is, don't talk to my wife that way. Because when you say that, we're here and he's here. When you say the other, we got a triangle. Principles. I want you to have as a rationale why we're doing this. And I love these little kids. I have a little neighbor girl, Julia, comes over and plays in the backyard with me. I love Julia. She's sweet as she can be. Little blonde-headed, air-headed. She's a little kid. She's everything, you know. Sweet as she can be. But she also needs to understand. She calls me Mr. Tom. She's respectful. I'm loving. We got a good thing going. What about what? Biting? Steak? Hot dogs? There are a number of theories on biting. The most effective way to stop biting, which I cannot endorse, you got me? Got that clear? But the most effective way to stop biting is to bite them back.
We use Tabasco. That's a spanking for the tongue.
I've also had parents use liquid soap. But you can use aversive conditioning techniques. I had one child when I was here at the med school who was in the midst of a failure to thrive. This kid was just going to die because they wouldn't eat. Well, what would really happen, they had started when they would ingest milk, they would regurgitate and chew on it. And so, in essence, what they were happening, they were getting in no nourishment. So what do we do? Well, I'll tell you what the old psychologist did. We squirted lemon juice in their mouth every time they regurgitated. Well, guess what? They stopped regurgitating. Same kind of thing. The Tabasco is okay, but I don't want to hurt. For instance, what happens if you're trying to put Tabasco in their mouth and it gets in their eye? See, again, be careful. And an 18-month-old especially. what you do is, rule, always explain once what the rule is. So I'm not saying never tell them any rules. Always explain once. Don't explain twice. You explain the rule. Even boy or girl, they use their mouth a lot. You explain to her, anytime you bite, even if you bite yourself, by the way, because the best way for her to get you back is for her to bite herself. I've had them do that too. Okay, you won't let me bite my brother, then blood. Had that happen? Okay, that's when you start using the true aversive conditioning, see? You can bite yourself if you want to, but I'm going to squirt Tabasco or whatever is effective. I'm going to be careful. But no, there's a consequence. And once I do it, by the way, do not explain. Do not say, you should never have done that. And if you ever did that, do this, did that. Don't give this gray lecture. So they can say, well, I wouldn't have done it if. See? That's why I don't want any. I want them to be responsible for understanding as best we can get them to. Let that be your project. Next 3 weeks, we're going to deal with the biting. Now, how often is she biting? I wonder why that would be. Because he'd knock snot out of her. But let that be your project. She bites you. First time you tell her, 18 months old, you bite mommy, mommy will bite you back. Whatsoever a woman doeth shall be done unto her. Whatsoever a man soweth, that shall he also reap. See, there's a biblical principle for this. Now, I'm not wanting child abuse. I'm not wanting you to hurt anybody. I'm not wanting anything like that. Y'all know what we're saying. We're going to use common sense. We're going to think about it. But we are going to draw a line. Will you let that be your project? Well, it depends on how bad you bite her. And I don't mean that ugly. I don't want to break the skin. By the way, what I tell parents when you start trying to do this, I call it Hell Week. Because until the kid really understands what you're doing and gets the message, they're not going to like it. Now, if perchance, you know, you bite and she laughs at you, what do we know by automatically from that? It didn't hurt her. It hurt you a lot more than it hurt her. You may then, because this is a dangerous situation, you may wish to paddle a biting. So you may wish to. I can't urge you to, but you may wish to. But that's alternative number two. If there must be a consequence that gets their attention. Okay, somebody else had it. Yeah.
I have a question. Going back to what Bailey was saying about dinner, because I think everybody in this room has trouble at some point. Would you feed the child breakfast, their supper, at breakfast?
I have done that, and with some kids that'll work, or put it this way, that's the only food you're going to get.
Because, see, the problem is if they get breakfast, snack, lunch, snack, and then by the time dinner comes around,
they're not hungry.
They're not hungry.
It's immaterial whether they eat or not.
Right. So that's what I'm saying.
They never get a vegetable because they've had.
Yeah, they've got to stay.
Exactly. I agree with you. But see, I want them to understand, though, that you don't get all this. The next day, I'll give you basic meal. You get the old meal you've got, but you don't get snacks until the old meal's gone.
Okay. Because, I mean, you want dinner when, you know, the whole family sits down. You want it to be pleasant.
Sure.
I mean,
of course you do. And that's what we all want. Me, too. I don't like chaos.
Yeah.
But I want them to know I'm the parent and I'm in control.
I was going to ask a dinner-related question, too.
Go for it.
But it's not... How do you control... And like, I have three girls, and they all want to talk at the same time. And dinner...
I can't imagine that, but go ahead.
Dinner can just be unpleasant. How do you... Like, what's the line between me being just too uptight and, you know, as a parent, or, like... I mean, do you send the time out for...
Talking too much?
I mean, you know,
what do y'all think?
Set a timer and say, you get to talk.
Hey, do you know any good dinner time rules?
I'm not opposed to dinner time rules. I, with you, want dinner time to be as pleasant and as positive as it can possibly be. It is the most family time of the day. I don't care what you say. That's the most family time of the day. We're sitting around the table. We're eating. We're talking. And in the future, that's going to be the most family time of the day. You probably are getting an awful lot of the chitter-chatter that goes on. Now, if they're just talking, that's one thing. If they're bickering, that's something else.
Well, they do some talking, some bickering, then they all three sing a different song at the same time. I mean, like, it's
horrible.
It.
Yeah, horrible. It's just not pleasant. And I don't even know how to describe it. I mean, it's just,
okay.
You know, Mama makes this great meal, but nobody enjoys it because it's just 30 minutes.
The sound like gets louder and louder and louder and louder as they try to out-talk each other.
So as they compete with each other.
Yeah, so there's interrupting going on, but there's also just, I mean, like, talking for just, like, they're not actually really saying anything, or they're singing, or then they're hitting, or they're...
All right, I've got an idea for that, because a lot of teachers do this at school. They have a red cup and a green cup taped together, and when the green cup's up, the kids can talk, but if the volume starts getting elevated or if it gets unpleasant, they turn the red cup up, and everybody has to be completely silent. And after a couple minutes, they can go back to green cup. And
that will work, i.e. if you're very, draw a crisp line, and then if you draw the line, the first one to talk must be dismissed. Time out. See? And then the others say, whoa. And the other one talks, put them the other one in time out. If you got two in time out at the same time?
Isn't the first part of the lunch quiet so they'll eat their lunch too? Like the first 2 minutes or something like that?
Yeah, the first 10 minutes. But I think that's kind of for a different purpose because this lunch is so short that they want to be sure every kid actually has time to eat.
They have time to eat, yeah.
But that's more of the school lunch.
And I'm going to go back and say again, I jokingly say this, but I seriously say it, our kids aren't going to die of starvation. You know, I have no trouble with your being firm with them about table rules. I want them to, what we're really working on here is respect. Respect, you know, make decisions with consideration for self and others. If we go back to my definition, that's right exactly where it comes in. Consideration for self and others. I want them to take turns. We quite regularly would go around the table and let everybody have their turn talking. And that's, of course, that's over-organization, and you don't want to live with that forever. Of course that doesn't work, okay?
It doesn't work at all at our house.
Then it will if you send one of them away from the table with no supper. That's what we used to call it. It's dinner now, I know. But if you really get serious with it, you'll get attention in a hurry when you put one in time out. And they may come back and eat if they'll be quiet. If they don't get to eat, and they go to time out a second time. Up the ante every time.
And now, what, dinner's over when we're done?
Like, yep, when you're done, dinner's over. Our time is gone, and y'all got to pick kids up, so I'm sorry about that. Scoot, I kept you too late, so I'm going to say go. We'll pray next time.
Thank you.
Thank you. See how far it went.